Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase, reporting from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's 80th Annual Convention. We're here in Kansas City with a long list of food and agriculture policy leaders, including Farah Ahmad, the Deputy Undersecretary in USDA's Office of Rural Development. We spoke with Deputy Undersecretary Ahmad about several subjects, including the implementation of the 2021 Infrastructure Law.
Success looks like stronger communities. And for us at USDA Rural Development, that means stronger rural communities who we know are the bedrock, both in the past and today, of our nation's economy. And what I find really, really exciting is the opportunity that the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law affords rural communities. So for example, within the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, USDA Rural Development got $2 billion for our ReConnect program, which is really our flagship high-speed internet program. And what was really exciting about that is we aimed to get that money out the door as soon as possible because we knew that rural communities, they needed that money and deserved that money today to get high-speed, affordable internet into their communities, into their homes, and into their businesses as soon as possible. And so I'm really excited to announce that we actually got all $2 billion out as of just this past month.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose we should probably zoom out just a little bit for folks that might not be as in the minutia with implementation of this law as someone like you or your colleagues at Rural Development might be. What are some of the things that were in this piece of legislation that ended up falling under the purview of Rural Development?
So the main one, as I mentioned, was the $2 billion for high-speed internet. And that's high-speed internet specifically for rural communities. And I think that really matters. So the overall Bipartisan Infrastructure Law had $65 billion for high-speed internet, and that was spread across multiple different agencies. But having $2 billion just for rural communities makes a really big difference because we know that it can be hard to compete for federal money and to set that aside and say, we know that rural communities need high-speed internet. And this president has a goal of 100% connectivity in this country. And that's not just any connectivity. That's high quality connectivity and that's affordable connectivity. And so USDA Rural Development got about $2 billion for high speed internet for rural communities. And that was for two different things. One is for the actual infrastructure itself, because we know that really matters to actually have that infrastructure that's long-term, that'll last and be future-proof in rural communities. But we also had another pot of money that was for technical assistance. And actually, a few weeks ago, I was in Oregon and we launched that technical assistance money for broadband while I was in Oregon. And I wanna talk about that because, you know, when we talk about some of the most remote rural places, you know, it can be really hard for those communities to apply to a federal grant. It's not always easy, but the technical assistance money is bringing in experts into rural communities who can actually help them figure out what kind of internet works in their communities, what type of strategies work, and help them actually put together a plan and then put together a successful application for federal money to take advantage of those $65 billion that's out there. And so we were really excited to have a little bit of that technical assistance money to help some of the smallest and most remote rural communities.
Mm-hmm. Let's continue talking about rural broadband here, because you mentioned the $2 billion infusion through the infrastructure law. That's on top of money that has already been funded through ReConnect and various other efforts on rural broadband really throughout the country and for quite a while now. At this point, what kind of a dent are we making in the rural connectivity gap, and what kind of a gap still remains?
So the gap is certainly there, right? Especially when you talk about the most rural and remote places. And so what's really exciting about the ReConnect program is we actually raised the standards. So our build out speeds are now 100 over 100. So that means that, you know, if a family is in their house and you've got parents who are, you know, working on their computers, you've got kids who are doing their schoolwork on their computers, they can all do it at the same time. And without build out speeds like that, you can't do that. You know, it's one person taking turns. It's a parent driving their kid to the McDonald's parking lot to have to do their homework. And so we've raised the standards of what it means to have high speed, high quality internet through our ReConnect program, which is exciting. And that's the kind of dent that we're trying to make with this program. But overall, over the last 2 years, we've put out $2.3 billion in high-speed internet money. And just to, for a little bit of top lines, across this country, that means 141,000 households who are now getting high-speed internet. That means 17,000 farms now getting high-speed internet, and 600 educational facilities now getting high-speed internet. And that's a huge dent, and that's the kind of dent that we're trying to make in this country to really get to that 100% connectivity goal.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the investments that have been made recently. Any in particular investments that we should be watching for, specifically when it comes to rural development?
Yeah, so in the high-speed internet world, absolutely. Like I said, we actually got all of our high-speed internet money out through the infrastructure law already, and that was really important. I think we were actually the first federal agency to get the dollars out the door. But we have a lot of other really exciting investments coming. There was another historic piece of legislation that was passed, the Inflation Reduction Act, that we have an incredible opportunity to help rural communities thrive and create new jobs. And in the Inflation Reduction Act, I know I'm talking in these huge numbers, but we actually got $10 billion to help rural communities build renewable energy in their communities, which ultimately helps lower cost to communities. That means lower cost to businesses, lower cost to farms as they need energy. In fact, recently I was at a farm in New Jersey. It's a farm that grows a lot of specialty crops, has a big focus on asparagus, and they got some money from the Inflation Reduction Act through our Rural Energy for America program, where we got an extra boost of $2 billion. And what that money did for that farm is they actually put solar panels on their farm, and it covers 100% of their energy costs. So I think annually their energy costs were about $200,000 plus. Now that's $200,000 that they get to keep, right? They get to reinvest in their farm, they get to reinvest in jobs, and ultimately that's money that's reinvested into the community. And that's why we're really excited about those opportunities that are coming through the Inflation Reduction Act.
Deputy Undersecretary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have more AgriPulse newsmakers from NAFB's annual convention in Kansas City right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. The big news on Capitol Hill this week was the passage of a continuing resolution that included an extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. We spoke with soybean producer Josh Gackle about the implications of an extension of the 2018 law, as well as a wait for new legislation.
It is good to see the extension. It provides a little more certainty now going into the next growing season. Of course, our preference would have been a full five-year Farm Bill with the important improvements to Title I, ARC and PLC programs, a strong crop insurance program, more MAP and FMD dollars, all those priorities that we highlighted throughout the past year and a half. But having the extension is helpful. Again, like I said, provides some certainty. And now gives us a chance, I think, there's commitment there from the House and Senate leaders, the chairs of the committees, to still work on a full five-year Farm Bill. So it gives us a chance next year to re-engage with the committees, with leadership, reestablish our priorities, remind them what's important to us, and perhaps make some adjustments along the way.
Mm-hmm. How are you expecting the fact that this extension did take place to impact things like reference prices for next year? I know there's probably some economic calculations that need to happen on the escalator provision, but you've got the same safety net by and large next year that you had this year. Your thoughts on that?
So there's, again, you know, farmers appreciate certainty, and the people that we work with in the value chain, lenders, input providers, others, that certainty is important. So I still think because it's just an extension and we didn't really get a chance in a full five-year farm bill to address some of the things that need improvement when it comes to reference prices, you know, perhaps, like you said, the escalator and those things, there's work, there's areas there to see that improvement. But again, reprioritizing or reestablishing the reason why it's important to fully address that and look, you know, why didn't it trigger, you know, the last time we had a significant price decline during the trade war? You know, we should have saw, you know, under the program, we should have saw that some implementation there and some of that safety net kick back to farmers, and we didn't see it. So, you know, looking back on why that happened and trying to fix that going forward is something we'll focus on.
Mm-hmm. So if we can get in the weeds a little bit here, one of the things that we've seen a lot of commodity groups kicking around is this idea of a potential base acre update in the next farm bill. Wondering, some people say that would pit commodities against commodities. Where does ASA as a commodity group stand on that?
Yeah, I think it is different for different commodity groups. It's different for different parts of the country. You know, it's different for North Dakota than it is somebody from Mississippi. So a voluntary base acre update has been the position of ASA, and we think giving farmers that flexibility to do what works best for them on their farm and for the crops that they grow, from our perspective, makes the most sense. So we would continue to emphasize, you know, giving that option to farmers for voluntary base acre updates if it works on their farm, and if that's something they want to pursue.
Mm-hmm. As we look kind of broadly at the risk management tools that are currently available to you all as producers, you know, new farm bill or no new farm bill, how are you planning on utilizing the risk management tools that exist heading into the 2024 growing season?
Well, what's under Title I in the farm bill has provided some certainty and a little bit of safety net value, but I think far and away for most farmers, the most important risk management tool is a strong, robust crop insurance program. So having appropriate funding there going into the next growing season, implementation, the right rules in place so that crop insurance kicks in when it needs to and when it's designed to. So continuing to work with both Congress and RMA on implementing the crop insurance program and, again, making it just funded adequately and the program is robust enough to provide that import. It's been probably the primary tool we've used on our farm when it comes to a safety net the past 6 years. And until we get a Title I that is more predictable, it's probably going to continue to be the most important tool.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I can't talk to a soybean industry leader without mentioning the phrases like renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, some of these big potential demand drivers that you all have going into this next growing season, going into this next decade, really. I wonder, as you look at the potential of these products for boosting soybean demand, how do you go about right-sizing the infrastructure that you all are looking to build as an industry to make sure you've got enough capacity, but maybe not too much, so some of these plants might get in financial trouble?
I mean, I think there'll be a learning curve. You know, and SAF, I mean, is probably somewhat newer than renewable diesel when it comes to what we're doing with crushing beans and renewable, and SAF is a little bit further behind in that development phase, but really exciting. I think the opportunities there down the road are tremendous for the oil industry and for farmers, you know, starting with the farmer. North Dakota is a prime example of, are we sized right for what we're doing? We're putting, you know, one plant just opened, another one next year. So these two plants together are going to crush just 90 mile circle of where I farm, over 100 million bushels of soybeans a year. And all the oil's dedicated to renewable diesel already. So, you know, the petroleum industry, the diesel industry sees the need there. You know, are we right or are we, I guess time is going to tell, but I think, you know, at this point it's exciting, and the fact that the industry says it's needed, you know, hopefully some plants, I think, and maybe you're right, some are starting to maybe back down a little bit and say maybe it's not time for us to move forward, some crush plants. So maybe that answer is already starting to sort itself out. And then on the meal side, I think, you know, that's going to be another challenge, is trying to find a home for all the meal. And I'm hopeful there as well, just hearing from, you know, livestock industry and shippers, you know, finding opportunities to move meal further than they thought. You know, maybe we don't have to do it all locally. We can get it on a train, we can get it on a truck, we can get it on a barge, use it, you know, export markets. I think there's there's a lot of opportunity there as well.
Josh, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
We'll be right back to look at more of the foreign policy landscape on AgriPulse Newsmakers right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Passage of a continuing resolution and an extension of the 2018 Farm Bill were among the major items on the congressional to-do list. We spoke with farm policy lobbyist Michael Torrey about what he's going to be watching from Congress going forward.
So I think the continuing resolution certainly has been front and center in the media, but there are other must-pass bills, and they only have a few days to do those. The National Defense Authorization Act, FAA reauthorization, the security activities need renewed. So I think that they have a lot to do in a short period of time to do it. This is not going to be coasting into the holidays, as I think a lot of the folks are kind of thinking right now.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that they are going to have these items on the agenda, anything in particular you're going to be watching from a farm policy perspective with those issues that they'll be trying to tackle yet this year?
I don't know on the substance that we'll be watching it, but we are going to be watching the politics of it. I think the politics that got us to having to do a CR, the way the CR was structured, I do think we need to watch that carefully in terms of Congress's ability to pass a farm bill next year. So we will be watching that.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that was in that CR, of course, is an extension of the 2018 farm bill through end of September next year. But let's talk about the amount of time that that they bought themselves. Realistically, the extension probably in all matters of practicality for things of dairy policy and some of the other permanent law issues functionally through the end of 2024. So what kind of timeline do you think is a reasonable expectation should they want to move a farm bill in 24? When do they got to get going on it?
So obviously a lot of conversations in the hallway, and certainly our team has spent a lot of time talking this thing through. And there's a couple of kind of big picture items that really need to be addressed. Number one, money, so that they can resolve spending. You've seen that, we have a baseline that we're working with now, and that there are demands from producer groups on updating some of the Title I provisions of that. So resolving the dollar figure is important for the Four Corners to really put pen to paper on kind of those items. They've put pen to paper on most of the other items and are kind of trying to put those to bed as best they can. The short, quick answer here, though, is that they really need to probably, in my view, have this thing done before July 4th. The earlier, the better, in order to have any chance of getting it done in the new fiscal year.
And I suppose that's as much a political timeline as it is a policy-based timeline, probably even more so a political timeline, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when you think about the margin in the House, when you think that it's a presidential election year, I mean, it's already ramped up, and we're seeing politics through this whole process, unlike, years ago when they normally didn't kick in until here about coming March, but it's already kicked in. So the political factor in all of this is gonna be important to watch. And at the end of the day, I mean, they can't pass a farm bill without Democratic votes. So that's gonna make it tough for them to get it done unless they can really resolve how they're gonna handle spending on nutrition programs.
Mm-hmm. This might be getting a little in the weeds on my part too, but with some of the escalator provisions on PLC reference prices, with some of the new CBO calculations that might be taking place, how do you expect some of those figure changes to impact the ultimate farm bill math that folks are gonna be doing?
Right, so right now they're operating under a CBO baseline that was established for this farm bill. A new baseline will come out in the spring. The budget committees will have to decide if they're going to allow the ag committees to stick with the baseline as it is now, or if they're going to have them use an updated baseline. As far as the impact on that baseline for commodity programs, I'm assuming, I want to be careful here because I don't know, but I'm assuming on nutrition spending that baseline goes up, and on commodity programs it probably goes down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. We've seen this, some very interesting activity on Capitol Hill this week is probably a mild way to put it. We had senators challenging witnesses to fights. We had members of Congress arguing with each other, referring to them as children's television series characters. I wonder, as you kind of zoom out and look at not necessarily the politics of farm policy, but the politics of Capitol Hill right now, what do you think is going to be the ultimate impact on the current state of play on Capitol Hill as these Capitol Hill, ag committee leaders try and write a farm bill?
Yeah, well, first of all, and I want to be careful here, but I think all of us in agriculture, whether we're Republican or Democrat, have always been very proud of the way the committees that represent our industry function. They have their disagreements, but that's part of the process. But they have a way to argue during the day and then have dinner at night. In terms overall and bigger picture, it's kind of hard to process exactly. The line has been shifted a little bit on decorum. It's not as if the country hasn't been here before, but it just hasn't been to this place in kind of my lifetime. And in terms of what does it mean, I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's job is to get reelected. So they're going to find a way through that process on what's necessary to do that. I think the real thing to watch is, we're just starting to see some of the retirements. So we have a House with Republicans having a majority of 4 seats. We have, 18 Republicans in Trump districts. We have 4 or 5 Democrats, or in Biden districts, we have 4 or 5 Democrats in Trump districts. So you take that margin and then you look at the retirements. And I mean, it's gonna be a year in Congress where they're gonna have to find a way to do whatever they need to do to get elected. And if that changes the decorum one way or the other, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. The 2018 Farm Bill, the final passage vote, passed on broad, sweeping, bipartisan margins once they actually were able to get a bill conferenced and get it done. Is the next Farm Bill, is that a realistic possibility to, meet, exceed, get close to that level of bipartisan support?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you'd asked me that question a year ago, I would have said that those margins were based upon the four corners at that time, who had a very good way of working together, both with their colleagues as a whole, but with each other. In this environment now, do I think we'll get those kind of margins? I don't think so. I think it'll be a little bit tougher. And I think a lot of that is on nutrition spending. Clearly you've got a lot of folks that want to reduce nutrition spending. And that, until they resolve that, I think we won't know what the margin will be.
Mm-hmm. So as you kind of watch the weather vane on Capitol Hill that'll tell you whether or not a farm bill is going to move, what are the signals that you'll be keeping a close eye on when it comes to potential for farm bill movement or potential for farm bill stalling on Capitol Hill next year?
I think Congress's ability to function. So we'll see how they handle the CRs in January and February. If they can get their spending bills passed by then, which so far, I don't think any of us have seen an indication that that's possible. So then how do they handle the next CR? And is it, through September 30th or not? And what votes does it take to get there? So that's what we're going to be watching. And then the money play. I mean, watching what's happening with the economy right now, and just, I think that's going to play out a little bit too, as far as how much this government spending issue figures in.
Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers from NAFB's annual convention in Kansas City right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Our thanks to Mike, Josh, and Farah for joining us for this edition of AgriPulse Newsmakers, and thanks to you for tuning in. Be sure to do the same next week for a look at more interviews from NAFB Convention, including exclusive looks at the fertilizer industry, the 2024 growing season, and the prospects of fertilizer and grain shipments by rail and barge across the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.